G'day guys, welcome to this week's Hash It Out. Here we are, gentlemen, Noah and Armenia. How are we?
I'm doing well.
Hanging in there.
Yeah, it's been sort of turbulent times in the market, as we all know. We've discussed at length. We're definitely in a bear market, and we might make that the topic for this week. Obviously, people who've gone through the previous crypto sort of bear market, or the crypto winter for that stage, kind of recognizes the different phases that sort of we go through in the different bear markets. So maybe we can discuss that at length today.
Sure. Well, I think it's good to start off that most markets will move in phases, right? And personally, I think the simplest way to look at that is you get kind of a growth and expansion phase, and then you get a consolidation phase. We're in the consolidation phase. Some people that are new and have never kind of gone through this, even in traditional markets, welcome to the show, you know. There's nothing that you can do, you know, in the immediate to change that environment. You know, we have certainly saw a lot of, I'm just going to call it rampant speculation in the crypto industry that kind of burned itself out. We had a lot of large counterparties that really did terrible with their risk assessment, and that's added on extra pressure. And then if you look in the macro environment where, you know, we're in the midst of raising rates and changing the definition of a recession, and you know, there's a lot of moving parts. But, you know, it is true that under the surface, the technology advances. So that's always where my focus is.
I think that's pretty evident in the Ergo ecosystem with the number of releases of late that we've seen across the entire ecosystem, based both on the core protocol level, but then also dApps and apps and everything else across building on top of Ergo. So it's nice to see. And we've got a major upgrade in a couple of, or basically a week's time, with the 5.0 implementation. And yeah, the code forge is burning hot here at Ergo. But yeah, definitely the bear market blues are well and truly within the industry.
Yeah, we were, before we started recording, we were kind of just chatting about this, about we're past the despair phase and onto the nobody has anything to talk about, so we just get mad at each other phase.
Yeah,
it's like, instead of good news, we find things to squabble about.
Ship slinging starts.
Yeah, you know, in my opinion, a part of it is liquidity dries up, right?
Yeah, big time.
So then there's like a survival instinct that kicks in. A lot of people, like, they have liquidity or they don't deserve liquidity and we don't have it. And, you know, it just leads to shit fighting. No other way to put it. And so, you know, this happens all the time in this industry, but it gets a lot more serious where, you know, let's say the only people that are left that are the most active are usually the most extreme or maximalist. And, you know, you get all the crazies, like, speaking the loudest. And there's nothing you can do but sit back and just enjoy the show. A lot of it's ridiculous anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good word for it.
The I think you made raised a good point earlier in regards to the rampant speculation, and obviously sort of we saw how that unfolded in regards to the previous cycle, basically 2021. We saw enormous growth, and it was just basically speculative assets just going crazy, like no underlying sort of feature sets or code base, or you could just print a token and away it goes. And you could see people just trying to jump on the train and get in early on Elon, Doge, bloody who knows what coin. And yeah, it's one thing that I hope moving forward into the next cycle and everything, we see a lot less of that.
I think in reflecting on the past, I guess, 2 years now, a lot of the big issues that we had that have now sort of collapsed or sort of come to light, I have to imagine a lot of that was a result of, or not all of it, but some of it, like the FTX thing, that's just poor business practices. But a lot of the exploits and a lot of the hacks and things like that, I have to imagine so many of these projects were racing to capture the, you know, the zeitgeist of the up market, you know, and when you're racing to capture liquidity and you prioritize deliverables over safety, you know, that's how we see a lot of those issues, I think. So, you know, I guess, you know, now is the time to take out the trash and plant a new garden, so to speak. But yeah, it's been a crazy few years, and I wonder if we didn't have the crazy bull market that we did, you know, how much of this stuff would have been an issue or not. Hard to say, but I have a feeling most of it would not have happened. People don't want to miss the boat.
This cycle's a little bit funny compared to last time, because we didn't really have that entire euphoria stage where everything was like, oh my God, like I'm crazy rich. I've got stupid amounts of money. I don't know what to do with. And just pure euphoria, blow off top. We didn't really see that. It was kind of, we had that first run up to, what was it, 60K or something along those lines. And then it stayed up there for a number of weeks and then sort of petered off a little and ultimately got back up to around that range. But my personal feeling, I don't think we really saw that pure euphoria where everyone was just losing their minds. So it's, who knows?
It's probably a good thing.
That's my perception anyway.
I don't know. I think things went a little insane in certain areas. Like you can look at like some NFTs and other ecosystems that were selling for multi-million dollars and
farming.
I'm not gonna say it's a cartoon, but it's a cartoon. Like
or a picture of a rock selling for.
The reality is interesting in terms of like value, right? You know, in the base layer, you can look at Ergo, and it is kind of an extended version of Bitcoin, where a lot of the same principles in terms of hard money apply, where you have, you know, a digital commodity that's backed by, you know, subsidizing electricity in electronic form and has a certain cost of production. And then when you get on top of the chain, sometimes you just have to ask the question, okay, is a token needed? Why? And what's its use, right? In terms of, let's say, a more standard like utility token or a governance token or something of that nature. And then we have the new, you know, NFT side, which, sure, I think, you know, art and music and culture always has some intrinsic value that's beyond my ability to fully grasp. But, you know, I'm not going to say I'm the smartest guy in the world to know what that should be anyway, right? So we did see a lot of, let's say, growth or kind of burning quite hot in both the NFT space and then sometimes in like the governance token/DeFi space this time. And it was an interesting experiment to watch, I guess. But in my mind, it was kind of crazy that like it kept rolling into a new, you know, fork or experiment with a lot of the DeFi stuff where you took an idea that was initially profitable and then failed, and then you just keep spinning it up and it keeps being profitable and failing. And
It's almost like in the lack of that like true euphoria that you're talking about, CW is like trying to chase that past, and in doing so you just get into the fork and farm and dump and fork and farm and dump and just like hoping for some yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Some sort of return.
The Ohm fork or the Wonderland or the snow dog or the what was it, the tomb forks and all this craziness.
Yep.
People just trying to find that euphoria wherever they can.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy industry to be a part of, and yeah, just sitting back at times and having that little bit of reflection, or just watching it firsthand all unfold and stuff, you just kind of, I don't know, kind of blows my mind at times. Basically, what people throw their money into, and just from a pure investment point of view, like, is there any due diligence, or is this full degen mode and just aping into anything and hoping sort of something, some sort of shit sticks to the wall and you strike it rich? But yeah, it's not the way I do things, or not the way I operate. It's just, yeah. But yeah, sitting back, it's pretty mind blowing at times.
There's a lot of DeFi printers in this cycle. I would say that was one of the trends where it's like, okay, let's create some new token and let's use that as a mechanism to hide permanent loss, their impermanent loss, you know, and then, you know, you get, let's say, certain rapid inflation in a lot of different cases. And then what does inflation do? If you really look at cryptocurrency as currency, well, if you rapidly inflate your money supply, you devalue it. And then, you know, so over time, the inflation, you know, hits the market, devalues the currency. And, you know, there's simply too much currency in the market to create that initial scarcity and, let's say, peak that we often would see. And so then it would be forked and tried again. And, you know, we know if you look at it as a form of money, right? If you just start printing money like crazy, you devalue. You know, I think that's, in my opinion, the most interesting way to really look at cryptocurrency, let's say, especially on the base. If Ergo is money, how do we use it as money? How do we create products that, you know, basically create utility with that asset or money? You know, and oftentimes it's, how do we print money on top of printing money? And that's kind of a, I don't know, crazy way. You know, you could say, yeah, there are like 20,000 cryptocurrencies, probably more now. And, you know, what are these tokens? What do they do? Are they more utility or access to where, you know, let's say, well, you know, we have something like ErgoPad. I think that's a valid case where it gives you the ability to have access to assist projects to move to market. That makes sense. But then you have other ones where I don't understand the purpose other than here's a token.
So initially, one of the main attractions that I found about Ergo, it's basically the, at the time, the unwillingness to tokenize things. And doing some research, sorry, like the Oracle framework and the reluctance to basically sort of tokenize that. There was no token on the mixer. The auction house had no token. And basically, I remember a comment from Kushti at the time actually was basically like, why do we need this shit? Like, why do we need token X? Like, there's no point. It's useless. But basically, that's one of the main reasons I was really attracted to the Ergo ecosystem, was basically sit here and build all these frameworks and sort of provide them to the community, but then also utilizing Erg as that currency then as well, not sort of have a speculative asset on top of another speculative asset like you were just mentioning.
It's an interesting thing to look at where, you know, let's say I did create Noah token, right? Because I like Noah, he's a good guy. And I were to go out and distribute that, and I would actually get people to, let's say, send their, you know, tokens to me, in a way, it kind of re-centralizes things. You know, and then usually what will happen, that small group or party, you know, will pull out some of their liquidity, and okay, that gives things a chance to kind of spread again. But I don't know if it's healthy. I don't know if a lot of tokens are always needed. I'd have to ask that question. Now, I'm not trying to like FUD anybody, or I think this is just a good question that everybody should ask. Like, what does this actually do, and how can I use it? Now, hopefully, if people do decide to create tokens, they take that responsibility seriously in terms of building value.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not always the case, unfortunately.
I think there are valid use cases for tokenization.
Yeah, I would agree.
Things get into security land sometimes, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's reasonable use case.
Absolutely.
The thing I think you should keep in mind, especially with like profit sharing tokens, you know, if there's 1 million profit sharing tokens and X number of people have them, that's great, but how much profits are actually being made on the protocol in the first place? Like, I saw something yesterday or today that Polkadot had like $900 in fees or something, like stupidly small value generation from some of the stuff, especially in the bear market. You know, like people are scared. People don't want to put their money into a smart contract. People are terrified of losing their money right now. There's so little trust in anything. And when that's happening and you have $1,000 of value moving through a protocol a week, how much profit is a governance token can really make you, you know? Like, the idea is great, but you have to keep in mind, like, percentage of a percentage. And when that initial percentage is very small and you have a percentage on top of that small percentage, you're not going to be making very much money. So that's just another consideration that users and community members should keep in mind when they're buying these things.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny that we always talk about, is it a security, right? In a way, because the U.S. is one country in the world, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's a ton of people that are in the crypto industry that could give zero shits about the SEC because they're not in that jurisdiction.
Totally.
You know, and if we're going to be a, let's say, a truly global network, why would we restrict all the other countries because of one country? Like, in a way that...
How's it work in Australia, CW? What are the securities laws like there?
A little bit similar. In regards to crypto and things like that, there hasn't been too much discussion around that. Like, we have really clear taxation laws, and we have, like, that's really defined, which is fantastic. You know how to operate within those rules. But in regards to sort of the tokenization and security laws and things like that, it's a little bit similar, but... there's not too much interest in it here, but not being in the US, and I follow the SEC rulings and things like that pretty heavily, because ultimately, or unfortunately, it does have a huge impact on the industry as a worldwide industry. It's unfortunate that's the case. Like, a lot of users are in the US and there's a lot of money in the US and things like that, but ultimately, if there is an unfavorable ruling by the SEC or something along those lines, the US market dumps instantly, which ultimately affects worldwide markets and things like that. But yeah, definitely case in point, it's just one jurisdiction in the world, and we shouldn't sort of circulate everything or centralize everything around the decisions on one person, basically, with Gensler. But yeah, it's...
If we look at, like, blockchain networks as a global network, usually the parties that could use this tooling the most are in underdeveloped markets.
Yeah.
Right. And so in a way, it's like, okay, well, if we could build tooling that actually gives them a just better platform, better clarity in terms of, you know, an economic system, maybe bonds, and yeah, okay, maybe something that, you know, looks like a security, right? But if it's better than what is already in there, this jurisdiction, I think that's a great tool.
Yeah, fantastic. And the whole purpose of these systems as well is trust, basically allowing trust in a decentralized sort of way. Obviously, having the permissionless systems and things like that in place where anyone can jump on board and build these tooling and empower the everyday person who may not have access to sort of centralized banking services and things like that. It's just taking that intermediary where loan sharks are basically taking advantage of a lot of people and extreme interest rates and things like that. Like, yes, there might be some profit sharing along those lines in some sort of undefined security sort of point of view, but obviously the percentage rate will be significantly undercut the loan sharks.
Yeah, my wildly unpopular opinion is I just come from the first principles perspective that this should be P2P networks, right? And so in that case, who cares what the third party thinks?
Yeah. Gensler, looking at you, Gensler. Who cares? Meanwhile, he's in bed with Sam Bankman-Fried anyway, so it's no, that's conspiracy world. It's tinfoil hat.
Tinfoil hat. You got some on under that baseball cap?
Just my head of hair.
No, no, but I mean, really, like, if we look at it from a first principles perspective of creating P2P economic frameworks for citizens of the internet, okay, he has power in one jurisdiction. He's going to use it however he's going to use it. Why do we care? Because the reality, you know, some people say, oh, we can go and convince him, you know, to do the right thing. Okay, like, I respect that attempt. Do I think that's going to, you know, change things? Let's see, yet to be determined, right? But the whole point of these networks is to be unstoppable. That's,
yeah, there's, you know, people don't want to break rules. mm-hmm. It may be true. But there is real fear.
Yep.
Of retribution, you know?
Yep.
We were just talking about this in the main channel the other night, the Telegram channel, about privacy and
mm-hmm.
Why a user might want to use the Mixer. From, you know, a USA point of view, we were just talking about how, you know, at least in the West, there's not a lot of fear of government oppression, at least at this point in time. That could change, you know. We've seen weird things in Canada with bank accounts and things like that.
I think that even goes to fringe use cases, man. I don't want you to see in my wallet.
Yeah, no, exactly.
If I'm running a business, I don't want my competitor to know what I'm paying my employees, what I'm, you know, what my payroll is, what the cost of my business is. Like, there's perfectly reasonable use cases for privacy that have nothing to do with criminality.
Totally.
But again, people walk on eggshells because they're scared to get regulated.
Yeah.
How often do you sit there with your wallet open while you're ordering a coffee at Starbucks for everyone
exactly.
to see? You know what I mean? Like, you don't sit there and do that. If someone looks over your shoulder, you give them a glare, don't you? It's just natural. You don't want people looking into your wallet and having any idea of what your business is. And I think that's reasonably fair and just sort of case. But especially in crypto, I think it's no different.
You shouldn't have to justify it, really.
No,
exactly.
Common sense in most parts of normal reality off-chain. Yeah. So, I, you know, it's not something that I take that seriously when people are like, oh my goodness, privacy. Yeah. Privacy is a right.
Yeah. It's an interesting point as well. Like, think about it from the perspective who may have a business or something like that. Obviously, you have discussions and you have costs of business and negotiate different rates for creditors and sort of employee costs and everything like that. Like, that's your competitive advantage there. You don't want people looking in and looking over your shoulder and then going and asking for the same rates and things like that, which ultimately undercut yourself. So, yeah, it's perfectly reasonable, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, it's a funny thing that, you know, we have this fear of the third party, right? Because in a, like, if you look at it just from a principles perspective, what's the problem? How do we design, you know, blockchain networks? Ideally, the whole point is you have a certain set of assumptions that if the system operates within those assumptions, you can assume that the system is honest. Right?
Yeah.
And so in a way, it's like, okay, if it's operating within that set of assumptions, we can assume that it's honest and that, you know, a party does not have control over the network. That was kind of the point.
What? The point isn't yield farming? No.
Well, I mean, from where this industry started, no. It was about creating P2P financial tools for citizens of the internet. Anybody anywhere with a connection can potentially participate, have access to tooling and economic frameworks that are not available in their jurisdiction. And so in my opinion, just because one jurisdiction says, oh, that's a security, you can't create that, I don't care. There's, you know, a lot of other people out there. And if people are within that one jurisdiction and they want to color within the lines, then let them. That's choice. But to say, oh, you can't build things that could potentially create value to millions of people in other jurisdictions, you know, okay, that's kind of why we say this is an open network. You can build whatever you want. And because you as a user have the ability to interact with whatever you want, you have a choice. Like, you can be in Ergo and never touch the mixer. If there was something that resembled a security, don't touch it. If you're worried about it, problem solved.
Yeah.
That goes to highlight another point of Ergo as well, is having that optional privacy perspective as well, where it's built on the application level, not built into the protocol itself. So users do have that ability to be able to pick and choose what they do want to interact with on that privacy front.
I think going back to all the craziness that we saw in, you know, the state of the bear market that we're in, I think it'll be really interesting to sort of watch how some of the craziness in the DeFi world matures. I think there will probably be a lot of use cases for a lot of that stuff in some way, just, you know, as we've seen iteration in time, the real resilient protocols stand the test of time. There's so much new stuff that, like, you know, people just threw ideas at the wall and hoped it would work, and it failed. It'll be really interesting to see in the next several years, like, some of these new DeFi protocols that do things that TradFi couldn't do. Like, where's real value being generated that's actually useful? Like, when the markets aren't hot, what's still useful? And well, how will things evolve in a way that isn't just money printers, but new use cases?
I think we get into the question of what is organic yield versus what is token Ponzonomic yield. That's the separation that we're going to see, is that you did have a lot of DeFi protocols that had very, very attractive numbers. But then you have to ask, okay, well, where is that yield coming from? And a lot of the times it was just inflation.
Yeah.
It wasn't like organic use and, you know, fee and, you know, it was just inflation. It was just printing money. So it's fascinating to watch as things have kind of imploded on the central counterparties that have blown up. Usually that was the bigger issue, is they had artificial yield. And so if we're going to move back towards what I would call practical DeFi, that's where we need to look, is yield driven approaches, where how do we build protocols that have sustainable rewards that are organic, right, rather than just plug in some inflation metric into a token and think that that's real value.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you often look at like traditional finance and things like that, and the percentage rates that are given, it's sort of 2-4% sort of thing. And even then it's sort of questionable how sort of things are happening on the back end. And then you jump into crypto and you've got something that's offering 10,000% yield and things like that. It's just like, where's this coming from? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just ridiculous. And that's just one of the extreme cases. There's numerous that are sort of even 20%, 40% yield. Farming sort of generation things, and it's just crazy. Like, we obviously saw what happened with Luna and the yield generations on that side, and there's one that actually came to light or once questioned just recently was Nexo, and how they're still being able to sort of provide the yield I think that's in 10% range. And that's in this market as we speak, and it's still sort of operating at the moment.
You don't know where the yield is coming from, you might be the yield.
Almost certainly.
Yeah. You know, and the reality is, if we look at, like, Ergo is a deflationary token that's backed by, basically it's a digital representation of the energy that it takes to create an ERG. Even if you have 1% yield, that's actually organic on ERG. That's better than what the market is paying at zero.
Organic DeFi, isn't it, really? Organic yield, and you're beating the protocol. You're not competing with the protocol itself.
Yeah, I think that if we create more sustainable economic frameworks, just, to provide use utility to ERG, to users in the ecosystem, and we do have dApps that'll come up and create value, but we try to stay more conservative. It's the bottom line. There's a lot of just madness. Some of the founders have said madness will, dress funny and be loud and have a big ego and, try to get as much attention as possible. It's still economic madness, in my opinion.
I don't know who you were referring to right then.
That was UCW. I just didn't want to say it.
Only on Friday nights.
Yeah. You going to party with Richard or what?
No, but that's just one of many. I mean, this whole...
One of many, yeah.
This whole Lambo culture shit that we see, that's just retarded. I don't know a better word for it.
It's just pathetic, really. Like,
yeah, like,
this is what I think if we can, to be.
Yeah, if that's who I want to be in life, I should just reassess.
Yeah,
I'd try to look at like these systems and really say, okay, if we could create more of P2P economic or even counter economic frameworks, where you get people to collaborate, you get them to build joint value, you give people access to economic systems beyond where they can just plug in locally. There's a lot of value we could create if we did that well. And yeah. I don't just mean monetary value, but in terms of life value, we can make people's lives better if we make these tools the right way. But then when you get lost in like this Lambo culture shit, all of like the principal change we could potentially create just gets buried in nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
It's the unfortunate thing as well, isn't it? Like, there's so much potential and things like that. You can see these protocols being utilized for, and then people end up trading crypto dick butts. Like, you know what I mean? It's on one hand, yeah, there's a speculation side. There's a bit of fun and games and things like that. But yeah, the ultimate use case and the value creation for these types of systems, definitely sort of, I think they're definitely underutilized, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value to be had in building these systems out.
Yeah.
The difficulty is patience and greed, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been pretty intrigued by synthetic assets in Indigo on Cardano just launched their like version one of their synthetics platform. I guess for people who don't know, synthetic assets are like, let's say you want to have exposure to like a Google stock or something, but maybe you're in a place where you don't have access to those markets. You can create synthetic assets that are collateralized to stabilize the price against those real assets, which to me seems like a very, very interesting use case for DeFi that isn't just a money printing token machine. You know, that's a really, really interesting idea, and I hope to see that expand and explored more, and it'd be really, really neat to see that on Ergo. But you know, I've been waiting to I'm sidelined because there's no real open source anything, and the documentation, it's not exactly clear who's behind the scenes pulling the strings. So you know, it, you got to be careful with this stuff, and as we've seen, you can't trust what you can't trust. You shouldn't trust.
I
was just going to say, it kind of ties in a little to what we were talking about earlier in regards to regulation and jurisdiction sort of overreach and things like that, especially for the US, and basically synthetics and derivatives and sort of that sort of digital representation. It's basically sort of digitizing Wall Street, sticking it on chain and being able to sort of trade stocks and things like that. Like, that's just one prime example. And yeah, I don't think that'll sort of go down too well, especially in the US sort of jurisdiction. But yeah, you did mention having access to or making these sort of assets available to people outside of these jurisdictions where they don't have basically access to stock exchanges in different countries and things, and they want some exposure. So yeah, it's on one hand, you've got one sort of thing clamping down with an iron fist and saying no, 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 no. And then the other hand, it's opening up an entire new marketplace for people around the world.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's funny that that's always the hurdle.
Yeah.
Consider, yeah. You know, like the first principles of crypto is to, you know, have create networks that are not dominated by third parties. But, you know, even if you look at the global economy, you know, if you want to go on a short, like, mind trip, look at the net exposure of the global derivatives market, right? It's, you know, it's fairy tale numbers, essentially.
It's $2 quadrillion or something.
Yeah, you know, I don't even think it, that's the funny thing is, I don't think anybody even knows.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you have that much counterparty risk and you have no idea who counterparties are, you have no idea what, you know, let's say kind of the line that would implode if we were to ever have a massive derivative issue. Blockchains are amazing at having hard-coded and transparent rules in terms of derivatives and having clear avenues of exits when there's an issue. So in that sense, I think we could build much better securities than the current derivatives market that we have globally. But again, you get back into, you know, Mr. Gary. What does Mr. Gary think? What's Mr. Gary going to do? And I don't know. Okay. Okay. I'm American. I guess he has some power here, but luckily there's literally billions of people that are not. So why don't we just build a tool and say it's for them?
It's a bit of a mind trip, isn't it? Quadrillions of value in derivatives markets around the world, and how they're all tied together and who's holding whose kind of parties and everything like that. No one knows.
And what's liquid, what's not liquid. I mean, there's a spider web there that just keeps growing.
Yeah. See that untangle. Holy shit.
Yeah. You know, if that were to ever implode, we would be in serious trouble. And guess what? If you were to build that type of derivative and counterparty risk on chain, it would be transparent. We would know how many, you know, what's the net exposure there in the derivative market, which right now, I honestly don't think anybody actually can give you a solid figure.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
But, you know, we got to be careful because Gary might not like it.
The funny thing with that too, that I keep thinking about this a lot recently, especially with, you know, the rabbit hole of all the synthetic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oracles really seem like an Achilles heel to me.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, there's been like a
people,
ton of
people pretend that it's fine, but it really feels like all of this shit really breaks down at that point in mm-hmm. the whole chain of actors involved. And it doesn't seem like a problem that's really been solved yet at scale.
Think about it from a derivatives point of view. If, say, for instance, there's one centralized actor in an oracle that's just getting a data point from Google on the, say, the US stock market, like the Wall Street, you know what I mean? On Ergo, you could basically pull multiple sort of data points from different exchanges from around the world, aggregate those costs and or those prices, and then provide a data point. It's not just relying on one sort of jurisdiction and one actor or anything like that. It's that's an extreme use case in favor of the Ergo Oracle framework, and that's the one benefit I can see away from those centralized sort of single API sort of data points.
Yeah, Chainlink even is centralized, I would have to imagine, right? I don't know very much about
chain. That's a huge problem. You know, it's like the government prints economic numbers and then people go to the store and they're like, wait a second.
You my pasta's gone up a dollar.
Yeah, like how did you come to this data point? You know, so having like decentralized data aggregation is big. It's needed because even off chain, you know, you have a ton of people who simply don't trust numbers because of the sources they run through. And maybe that's, you know, legitimate. Maybe it's, you know, tinfoil under Noah's hat, right? But having transparent data that we can draw from and make assumptions and decisions and ultimately, you know, potentially build economic frameworks with, I think it's critical.
Yeah. Get away from the Chainlink, whole trust me, like, bro model.
With Chainlink, where, like, who's verifying those data feeds, you know? Like,
I have no idea. I've only met with them a few times.
Like, fucking everybody uses Chainlink.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's just another trust me, bro. This is all good. Don't worry about it.
But just think if one data point was compromised and the impact on the industry, like that's significant.
Yeah. We've already seen manipulation of price and oracles.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, there was the whole Mango Markets thing, where the guy made like $100 million by manipulating oracle data or something like that.
I would love to see like a community initiative to try to get a ton of actors pulling and collecting and basically submitting Oracle data. on multiple different aspects. I think that would be huge. The difficulty is most people tend in this space tend to want to be a little bit lazy and just go to the moon.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think that the actual economic incentive, you know, while there will be some there, it won't it's be
pretty
like
damn oh, small.
Yeah, exactly. It won't take you to the moon, but it would assist in assuring an honest system. You know, and ultimately, if we have a more honest system, then we have better frameworks in the system. I would love to see some community initiatives around that. And, you know, I know Green Hat's in the later stages of his roadmap. And then it's a matter of like, yeah. how do we build the right UI, UX to make that easy enough that somebody that, okay, they can spin up a node, but, you know, they're never going to code a smart contract. How can we make it easy enough for that type of user to run this type of infrastructure? You know, hopefully as a community, that's a issue we can solve, because then we, you know, could have just better resilience in whatever we build.
Yeah, it'd be great to see that.
Yeah, commercialization of the Oracle framework would be fantastic. Being built out, it's one of the sort of flagship features I think of Ergos alongside the Mixer, and seeing the community grab that and run with it and ultimately make it their own and their own business and go out and market and commercialize and offer data points throughout the industry. I think that'd be a huge use case and ultimately an addition value to Erg itself.
Yeah.
Take so that with down. That, like oh. for the Erg USD Oracle pool, for mm-hmm. example, like how does one, like, let's say there's, this is crazy, but let's say there's a developer on Ethereum that wanted to like access that data point.
Mm-hmm.
How would they do that?
Well, it depends, you know, how does Chainlink do it? It's an API.
Yeah.
It's really nothing.
Is there like great. An Oracle pool API that people can plug
sure.
into?
I'm sure that we have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, then it's just a matter of, okay, you need to build out a set of Oracle assets that you're tracking that have some utility. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in the future, if we could create a community of Oracle operators, CW could come in and say, hey guys, I want you to support this. And it wouldn't be that hard to spin up and provide that as a service to, you know, a developer or decentralized application.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. We got a way to go, but
we're still working on the foundation, in my opinion. And in terms of if you actually want to build valuable, and I'm going to use the word conservative, financial tools for like people to participate in a global economic framework, we do have ways to go, absolutely, but we're progressing. I mean, that's something that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, we're in, you know, 2000 with the tech bubble. And my thinking, we're in like 1986 with dial-up.
So crazy. That's a fair point.
Yeah, like I think that in terms of like the complexity that could be built and the value that could be provided, we're way before even the internet age.
Yeah, I mean, last time I was reading about like Bitcoin NG,
mm-hmm.
and you know, a paper is a paper, but it sounded pretty incredible, and from what I can tell, that hasn't been implemented.
It's been changed around, but certainly Avalanche.
Avalanche, you know, okay. I wasn't sure.
Variant. There's a couple different sub-block confirmation protocol papers that are interesting. I know that as we move into Node 6.0, that's going to be one of the things on the menu is, you know, what makes sense, what are the pros and cons of different approaches. You know, start from there, then, okay, what would implementation look like? And there's also some new potential. You know, I know there's a few cryptographic primitives we could potentially support. You know, there are a couple of upgrades we could do on the application level. You know, and me personally, I would even like to see the difficulty adjustment revisited or some, you know, working group in terms of optimizing that. I mean, it works kind of, but it certainly could be better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Got us through a pinch.
Yeah, it was a rough time, so we adapted on the fly. But do I think that's off the table forever and that's how it is? No. I would love to see that restarted again in terms of the discussion and maybe a working group and, you know, maybe some R&D implementation, maybe even a revote. Let's see. People have a lot of power in the community if they do something.
Yeah, not just sitting on the sideline and slinging shit. Come and join the conversation and please provide some feedback. And yeah, that's one thing that sort of really I like about Ergo as well is you can get inclusive, like the conversation's inclusive. It's not just sort of look at the devs and say, help me. It's the invitation is open for everyone to come on and board and have your say. And that's basically users, devs, miners, everyone in the ecosystem, come in and join the conversation because you can provide some insight that someone may be missing or overlooking and be beneficial to the system.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I get it. You know, people are busy. People have a lot of shit going on, especially right now. Nobody wants to be slogging away on crypto stuff when the markets are miserable, but
you know, it's a time to build, Noah.
Well,
yeah.
What I was gonna say is you can't complain that things aren't happening if you aren't contributing yourself.
Yeah.
No, you can't. It's called Yelp, man. You just sign on and you leave your one star review and think of yourself important.
Well, sure you can do it, but will I respect you for it? No.
No, it's true. Being a critic is the easiest job in the world because you don't have to do anything other than complain.
Yeah, it's so much harder and more involved to actually think about about how you could help is mm-hmm. difficult. You know, like it's so easy to identify that something is not working. But actually trying to come up with a practical and reasonable, actionable solution is so difficult. And, you know, because of that, people tend to not participate. But, yeah, the door is always open. And that's what I love about this community too, CW, like you said. Like, it's not just an inner circle of paid developers that are working on a thing. It's like, we're all just people with an idea and a vision working mm-hmm. toward it together, you know?
And who doesn't appreciate help?
Yeah,
exactly right. A prime example of that actually was Kushti today put out a message saying that he wants to start a discussion group on sort of ecosystem development and 6.0 and even a refinement of EIPs, like ultimately bringing everyone in and having a collaboration. His little comment at the end was like, I want some help with this. Come and join the conversation. Get on board.
It's quite funny in a way that I guess what I would love to see is a community that's more engaged, developers that are more engaged, miners that are more engaged. Rather than, you know, sit back, say, fix it, do everything. And, you know, I would love to see more people actually contribute because that is what decentralization is all about. Take as much power as you can, use your skills, contribute. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of people just look at it as a, like speculative investing. You know, it's not like community growth and network growth and engagement. They just look at it as speculative investing and say, well, why would I do that? I'm just put my money in here to get my Lambo and I'm out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's the cool thing about Ergo. It's really, really close-knit community and really like-minded people, but a very diverse set of people as well. Like, if you look at some of the chats that we've got going, especially in Telegram, I don't think you can get much diverse across the board than what we've got here. And I think I was talking to you, Joe, about this earlier, maybe even last week, about we've got a lot of people discussing things in our chats, which are like a lot of people would sort of see as unfavorable or sort of not sensitive in things. And ultimately, they're still here in the Ergo ecosystem having these discussions. And I think that's the beauty of our community. It is an ecosystem and it is a community where people still come here and engage.
Yeah, if it's going to be a peer-to-peer network for moving, and using economic tools, you got to engage as a peer.
Yep. Very well said. And on the engagement front also, like I sent out a couple of tweets this week, just basically try and start a discussion around even minor fees and things. They have the ability to jump on. It's a simple majority. They don't have to sort of go and ask anyone permission to raise fees or anything like that. They can start the discussion now. And ultimately, in sort of unfavorable times like it is now, they could raise the fees to try and ease that burden on them a little bit. I know for a fact that fees on Ergo are very, very cheap. They're very cheap. And ultimately, as a user, if you did see a small increase, even a 10 or 20X in the fee price, even when price of ERG appreciates, it's still a pretty significantly less cost compared to other sort of blockchains and things like that. So as a user, I wouldn't mind it. But yeah, obviously, that's a discussion to have and the miners sort of take control of that.
But they're not. That's the difficulty. They're lazy.
Yeah.
That's the truth. They're not engaged. Yeah, that's sad. I'm sure there are some that would be happy to. Maybe it's an educational issue. I know Noah actually worked on the deal for the hackathon. Maybe we need to get that out there and say, hey, guys, somebody gets mad at me and says, Armenio, Ergo's not profitable. I'm like, have you ever thought about raising the fees? Like,
well, I've seen that question thrown around a lot. Why is Ergo so unprofitable for mining? Yeah.
It's the stupidest question.
Like, obviously, price plays a big impact on that, but
yeah, you have little price second oversupply from the merge, but yeah, you have power. Why don't you use it? I don't understand it, but then it's like, okay, is it going to be on me to go and babysit and go to all the mining pools and say, hey, we should probably raise the fees? Like, that's not very decentralized.
Save us, Joe.
Yeah, I would love to see the mining community really become independent in terms of looking at, like, okay, what are comparative rates and fees, and what is reasonable for users, and how can we maximize our service and maybe get paid a little bit more when times are tough. I fully support that. The difficulty is I don't want to be the guy that's doing it, because then as soon as there's another problem, they're just going to be like, fix it, and I don't want to fix it.
And yeah, it's not just a fact or matter of fact of just sitting there and coming together just in themselves as well and coming to a consensus of what they should raise the fees to, but it's got to be an open dialogue to users and what they'll be willing to pay, because ultimately it's a fine line between providing a service and what someone will pay for that service. And it's just that's just general consumerism, basically. If you're going to outprice the market, then people aren't going to buy your product. So it's just one thing that need to be considered also.
Yeah, I would love to see these be more peer-to-peer networks in terms of how people approach them rather than just investment products. Because if you really want to show Gary that this is different and not just an investment product, don't treat it like an investment product. I mean,
it's a currency.
Yeah, it's a currency, and as kind of the individuals doing work to create that, bring it to market, generate the token, you have a tremendous amount of power, but you have to engage as a peer. But I would love to see that. I know it's a bear market, and so what's the high probability of getting a bunch of people excited to do that? Low. But I'm sure there's
also in the early stages, we're like at the bottom of the, we're in 1986, like you said. So for a lot of people, it's like a different paradigm of thinking about this stuff. And it's trying to create
peer to peer money. Then a lot of people are very caught up. The only community that's really not, that I see is The Bitcoin maximalists, where at least they think in stats. They're sats, you know, they think in Bitcoin rather than dollars.
Yep.
Most of people in the crypto market do not. They think of it in terms of dollar gain. So it's an investment product. No wonder Gary's after us.
We got the fiat brain.
Yeah, you got to get off the fiat brain.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of people sort of, even on the investment front, on trading point of view and things like that, they trade against the USD or USDT, not sort of trading against sats and stacking sats and that sort of mindset. Sort of, you know, and like that's a mindset that needs to sort of change, especially on that sort of investment front also, like you're just mentioning. But gents, we're coming up to time. We're a little bit over, actually. I think we got a bit excited here at the end of the day. Is there any last words we want to sort of talk about here today?
Just continue to build, continue to engage. Those of you that are out there that have been real peers in the community, we all appreciate it. That's where the value is.
I will say to everybody launching NFT projects and minting tokens in this market, you have my full solidarity. Good luck. It's a tough time. There's not a lot of people investing in anything right now. I know we have a few really dedicated artists in the community, and I know it's got to be hard right now. But yeah, shout out to you all. You're getting through it the best you can.
Yeah.
Everyone's on the grind.
Yeah.
For me, I just like to say, and it ties into our, I've said it numerous times, just in regards to like the developer update. And I think this week was a great insight in regards to sort of that cross collaboration that we've got working in the Ergo community itself. And we saw ErgFlip come in this week, and they're a new product and basically got to be able to spin up a nice little working app. Thanks for clarifying that and correcting me on that one, Joe, in regards to not a dApp, it's an app, it's centralized. But yeah, having the development environment that we can sort of allow that to happen, no back-end experience, and have a working app in a number of days, and it's really good. And I think I was Swamp Audio being able to utilize ErgoPad and the staking features in there, and then obviously the NFT minting feature from Sky Harbor. Having that open collaboration and mind sharing discussions in the Ergo ecosystem is fantastic. So I hope that moves forward.
Yeah, and one last thing about just contribution and engagement. That was the word I was looking for. With ErgFlip, I spent a bunch of time just, you know, pointing him in the right direction and testing with him. And even that, like, that's the most valuable thing you can do. Have a real conversation with a new developer.
Treated him like a peer.
Yeah, make them feel like you value what they're adding to the ecosystem, because I do. And, you know, I asked him how he... Because he told me he was a Cardano developer that is now interested in Ergo. And I asked him why he came over. And he was just kind of interested. And then we were nice to him. And that's why he's here, you know? Like, it's as simple as that.
Be a good peer.
Be a good peer. That's it. You know? That's it.
I mean, contribute, have a laugh, join the conversations, build something cool.
Yep.
What else is there to do? All right, gents, well, it's been a pleasure chatting once again. I got through this sort of bear market blues there pretty nicely and ended on a good note. So obviously we'll tune in next week and hopefully bring something a little bit more uplifting next week. We'll see what happens. See what the market gives us.
We'll see.
Cheers. Not promising anything. All right, guys, have a good one.